We have our first genetically modified hybrid.
You just went and made a new dinosaur?
Probably not a good idea.
Everybody, welcome to the Geek Generation. I'm your host, Rob Logan, and joining me in the studio once again, Mike Volby.
I'm here.
We have a lot to go over today.
We do?
Of course we do.
Oh, okay.
We always do. But before we do, I just want to remind people that I am currently available for hire for all of your digital media needs, photography, photo editing, and retouching, graphic and web design, or video and audio production. You can see my portfolio and get more information by going to RobLoganMedia.com or follow my work at Facebook.com/RobLoganMedia.
Awesome.
Later in the show, we will be going into the spoiler room to talk about Jurassic World, which we are very excited to do. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But we have a lot of things to talk about before we do that. And the first is our Geek Outs.
Yay!
Volpe.
Well, with the very little time that I've had available, since all I do now is work
all day,
I was playing Fallout Shelter.
Yes.
Even while I'm at work.
New released Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, it's
free.
Fun. It's free, it's fun, and it's on your iPhone, people. Mm-hmm. It is, you get to play as the overseer of a vault. You can just randomly get a vault number, you could pick your own.
Did you pick your own?
No, I just randomly did my own.
Okay.
And it starts you off with the peacock people outside the vault. You got to bring them into the vault. Easy enough. There's a living space. And then it takes you through a little bit of showing you what to do. It has you build your three basic needs, mm-hmm. which are electricity, food, and water.
Okay.
So there's a room for each. The rooms can be upgraded. If you put two rooms next to each other and they upgrade together, they become one big room.
Oh.
You hire more. You put more people into work. You mm-hmm. produce more electricity. The key is those are the three things that are most important. And as you have to hit certain marks based on how many people are there, mm-hmm. if there's children, this, that. And as they start to drop, different things happen. If the water supply starts to run low, people will start to become more radiated.
Mm.
So there's a challenge with that. You need to bring in more people. Some have skills.
Okay.
Some don't. There's outfits that some people wear in that allow for more skills. Like you need your action or agility skill is for some reason what's needed for the kitchen, the dining area.
Okay.
To produce food. Maybe you got to be quick. That's what they want.
Maybe. It's all those knives being handled.
There's a little bit of learning to it and trial and error and looking at people and their stats and adding an outfit to them to enhance their stats.
Okay.
To produce the electricity, the food, and the water at a fast pace because the meters will start to drop fast too.
Oh, okay.
And you have your overall happiness within the vault. And then there's tons of other things you can build, electrical room, exercise rooms, bars. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
All right.
I'm still just in the basics of trying to survive, upgrading the vault entrance to stop scavengers from coming in.
Okay.
But it's a fun game. You can send the people you have, you can equip them with weapons and armor and send them out into the wasteland. You don't see what they do, but they go out and you can track what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll tell you they got into a fight with a bee or an ant or they got damaged, and you can supply them with stim packs for health. So it's a pretty in-depth free game.
Cool.
And it seems like you can make the vault as big as you want.
Right.
You can go across. You can go all the way down. You add elevators. So far, the game's been very addicting and very fun. And the only downfall, as I mentioned last week on the show, was that it does seem to drain your battery.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully there'll be an update to it to fix whatever that is. But this game really will just suck the life out of the battery.
Well, it seems like there's just so much going on from what you're describing that it's constantly doing things.
But the graphics are cool. All the characters are in that cartoony shape.
That like Pip-Boy character style,
But the game is fun. It's free.
Yeah.
Download it. I would recommend if you have an iPad, that's probably the best way to play it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little challenging on the phone to point and like grab a person and move them to another room to make them work there. Or if there's an invasion, to make them go in and and fight.
Sure.
Without zooming in and then having to zoom out, which you can't do at the same time.
Right.
So if you were on an iPad, it would make it easier. But it's still fun on the iPhone.
Cool.
Definitely worth downloading and playing if you're a Fallout fan. Especially and if you're not, free. It's still like a Sims-style game. Sure, so sure. You might still enjoy it.
Any simulation type mm-hmm. game that you might enjoy.
And you downloaded it?
But I did, but I haven't played it yet. Mm. I haven't had a chance.
You'll enjoy it. It's
I
fun.
Think so. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right.
That's it. That's literally been the newest thing in my life.
Okay. my first geek out is, again, I feel like it's going to be until I actually go, San Diego Comic-Con. Mm. I have my first interviews booked. I have applied for a lot more. I haven't heard back yet, but I hopefully will fairly soon. The only confirmed appointment I currently have is to interview the cast of Sharknado 3.
Which is kind of cool.
Very cool.
I mean, you know, it's Sharknado.
It is.
It's the biggest shit movie ever.
I know. And people are still super excited about it. So, and nobody is pretending like this is some epic piece of cinematic film. Like it is. We know what it is. Yeah. They know what it is. But I'll be able to interview Ian Ziering, Tara Reid, Cassie Scirbo, and David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
So that's quite a foursome to meet mm-hmm. on top of the writer and director as well.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Looking forward to it. My next geek out is Silicon Valley Season 2. Have you started watching it at all?
I only watched a couple episodes with you.
Oh, okay. Season 2 recently ended
mm-hmm.
and was just as good as the first. I did save up a lot of it to kind of binge through
mm-hmm.
at the same time. I wasn't sure how many episodes were going to be in the second season. I think it's longer than the first.
Oh.
So when it got close to like the 8 episodes, I was like, okay, I can start watching now. And then I was like, I'll just watch the final episode next week when it comes out. But then there were like 3 more episodes after mm-hmm. that. So I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't quite binge the way that I expected to, but that is a very bingeable show.
Yeah.
Because
half hour episodes.
Yeah. They're nice and short. So, and it's only like, I don't know, like 11 or 12 episodes in the second season and 8 in the first.
Oh, it's quick.
So it's very quick to get through it all. And and there is already going to be a season 3.
Nice.
We're aware of that. So,
well, it seems like a show. Seems like the show's doing well.
Yeah, it's doing very well. It was up for Emmys and whatnot last year. And I believe the viewership is pretty high. So excited for more of that. Yeah. I highly recommend it to everybody, but that also leads to my next geek out because Mike Judge created Silicon Valley
mm-hmm.
and he was recently on Nerdist to promote that amongst other things.
Yeah.
For people that don't know, Mike Judge is also the guy behind Beavis and Butthead.
Yep.
He was behind Office Space. He was behind King of the Hill. This guy is amazingly talented and does tons of things very, very well. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I found the most interesting about the interview when he was on Nerdist is he told a story about when he was working on Beavis and Butthead, how he created the character of Cornholio and like how that episode was made and stuff. Turns out he had a joke with someone else and it was like a weird name similar to Cornholio, but he would just say it and the name kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the episode was made was very unconventional for any cartoon, really. Basically, since Mike does the majority of voices for characters on the show, he went into the sound booth without a script
mm-hmm.
and said, I'm just going to improv a show.
Cool.
Like, I have a basic idea in my mind. Let's just try this and see what happens.
Mm.
And that was the episode, The Great Cornholio, the one introduced that character,
mm-hmm.
who's become like the big breakout character of the show. And everyone loves seeing when Cornholio episodes happen now. So the fact that that was created pretty much on a whim and improvised before any of the animation was done, like they animated based on his voice recordings that were done beforehand, which is kind of like a reverse process of what sometimes happens. Or at least they have a script so they can start animating from, but he did all the voice stuff first.
That's cool.
That's really
cool. Some of the best things come out last minute. They just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, like they were saying on the show, like a songwriter, some of their best songs, like they'll labor for months over a song and it comes out and it's like, okay, that was good. But the best songs seem to be the ones that you pump out in like 20 minutes.
Right.
And it's just like, it just came out of me. My subconscious created it and I just spewed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome. But to hear that a whole episode of a show like that was, it was like, I had no idea at the time that this was going to be.
No, of course not. How do you know?
As big as it is now.
Well, nobody who writes a song and it turns into a huge hit and they did it in 20 minutes on an airplane during landing.
Right, right.
Thought that that song would be huge. I mean, you hope it is, but.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
Did he talk about it all? Like what's going on with Beavis and Butthead? Is it going to come back again? Is he done with it?
I think I've heard him speak about that before, and they had done that series recently, and then it almost like just fell away. Like they never really approached him to do more, and he didn't, like they just kind of stopped.
Well, he's got a new project anyway.
Yeah, so yeah. It was never canceled. They were just like, if we do, if we do, if we don't, if we don't. Mm. So I don't know. There's some other weird reason too given, but I don't remember exactly what it was. But yeah, he's moved on to other stuff, obviously, now. I mean, he could always go back, I'm sure.
I'm sure that would be a cool thing to do. Every few years, you come back with a little season. Couple episodes.
Yeah, yeah. That would be cool. My last geek out is a show that's going to be premiering on Netflix, and that is DreamWorks Dragons Race to the Edge. I didn't know this was happening, and then I saw a recent trailer. So this is the How to Train Your Dragon franchise. Mm-hmm. I know they had a series running on, like, I forget what channel for a little while. I thought they did at least, but I don't remember. And they've had some spinoff movies as well. And when they're not the official movies of How to Train Your Dragon, they still take place in that universe, but they'll call them DreamWorks Dragons instead, which this is. So this is still Hiccup and Toothless and all the characters that you know from the movie franchise, but just in a TV series. They have a Netflix series that is going to debut on June 26th, and all 13 episodes will drop on that date. And I love that. I love that whole new model of all the shows are here for you.
I do too.
Because I don't like watching from one week and waiting to the next most of the time. And the thing that I really, really like about like Netflix and Amazon Prime shows and everything like that is it's a more fluid story simply because the commercials don't exist.
Right.
It's just a half hour of the story.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, okay, we need to plan for a commercial break here so that the person stays tuned through the commercial and comes back to it afterwards. It's just the story. It's the same reason I loved watching Daredevil and all the stuff that's been on Prime and Netflix. Like, that is a huge advantage to not be interrupted by commercials every 5 minutes. And it results in a more interesting product.
It's almost like they're forced to produce good quality content versus worrying about content that will draw in sponsors.
And content that will hook you through the commercial break.
Right. They have to hook you through the whole thing now.
Right.
Because it's too easy to just hit the back button or pick up your phone or whatever.
Silicon Valley's the same way, just because it's on HBO. It doesn't have a commercial break through the actual episode. So instead of watching something that the commercials have just been edited out on, or you're skipping through your DVR, it's simply watching it as it was intended.
Right.
Which is so much better.
Well, TV's changing. There's more and more content coming out.
Yeah. Like, I would prefer, honestly, I know TV stations would probably make less money this way, because a half hour show on TV is really only 22 minutes.
Right.
23 if you're lucky.
Yeah.
I would prefer they showed a 22-minute show and did 8 minutes of commercials, like a giant commercial chunk afterwards. They could even show an infomercial in that time and then just show another TV show afterwards. But that's not going to keep somebody hooked. 8 minutes of commercials, they're out of there. So that's obviously why they don't do it.
I mean, I think advertising during TV is going to change eventually anyway. I think you're going to see.
Oh, it has to.
They're going to give you the 30 minutes of show. But during the show, advertisements will pop up on the screen at the bottom or at the top.
I think, honestly, there'll be a lot more product placement and a lot less.
I guess you have
a lot less
direct
advertising, because I think product placement is more effective. Like, if you see a character drinking a brand of something and you really like that character, there's something subconscious about that.
Well, we saw Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Jurassic World, sorry. And he was drinking Coke, but that didn't make me want to go get a Coke.
See, I didn't even notice that he was drinking
drinking Pepsi while he was drinking his Coke.
But like, they even mentioned at one point Verizon Wireless presents Indominus Rex.
Right.
Like, it's going to be stuff like that, which movies have been doing forever. And most of the time you don't notice them, but you don't know that your subconscious doesn't notice them.
Right.
So your preferences are being programmed in a different way. Mm. And that happens more often than we think. Movies have been doing it forever. So why hasn't TV adopted this model by now?
They may.
I hope so. It's just so much less intrusive. All right. Those are our geek outs.
All right.
So freak outs now.
Oh, freak out.
Fortunately, I have none. Yeah. Which means that there's no shit.
Not a lot of new stuff and not a lot of shit either.
No, just like I said, I mean, it's just working so much that I don't really have any time for anything bad to happen. Where's wood? I'm going to knock on wood. Ready? There it is.
There we go.
Okay.
Superstitious.
That thought was actually my own head that I was knocking on. You guys just can't see it.
Well, then my freak out is the news that Constantine has been canceled for good. Oh,
yeah,
I saw that.
Yeah. They switched the channel? Is that what they did?
That was the plan. NBC had canceled them a while back, and then the creator of the show was like, yeah, we got canceled by NBC, but that doesn't mean we're dead in the water. There's other channels that NBC owns, Sci-Fi being one of the more prominent ones in appropriate locations.
Absolutely.
To where we could go. So we're going to shop the show around and see if any other networks want to pick it up. But unfortunately, even after shopping around, those efforts didn't work out, and unfortunately, Constantine is gone.
Doesn't mean that Netflix or Amazon or Hulu won't pick it up at some point.
No, I think everyone's been released from their contracts at this point, so it's done.
It's dead.
Yeah,
it's did it shame. Just do that bad?
I don't know if it was that it did that bad or that. I mean, it was like a Friday night show, which is the Friday night death slot, as they call it, because shows generally just don't pick up there.
Right.
It was a darker show than a network's necessarily used to. Like, it's on NBC and it's something kind of sci-fi and paranormal and dark and like hell oriented and all these weird type of things.
I don't see where the problem lies.
Yeah. So I just don't think it was necessarily in the right location. I think it could have done better elsewhere. And it's a shame that this is the final result of that.
I think it's a show that's a little more mature.
Yeah, definitely.
And probably should have been on like AMC, or if it's still not mature enough, you know, you look for Showtime or HBO to pick it up and make it darker and, you know, whatever they need to make it.
Right, right.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it's a shame, but I guess we'll just have to wait for new stuff to come out to watch.
Yeah.
Not a lot we can do about it is what it is. Before we move into the news, just a quick reminder that you can support the show by going to thegeekgeneration.com/support. When you do, that will take you to our Patreon page where you can sign up to become a patron of the Geek Generation. You just sign up, you choose a contribution amount, and that amount will be donated automatically each month. You can cancel that donation at any time. We are asking for $1 a month, which is roughly 25 cents a show. Not anything crazy. And again, you can go to thegeekgeneration.com/support in order to do that. If you want to support us in another way that is not just taking money out of your pocket and handing it to us directly, you can support us by going to thegeekgeneration.com/Amazon and do your shopping through that link. We'll get a small kickback. Doesn't cost you anything extra, but also helps us out.
Yes, it's easy to do.
Super easy. All right, news time.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have to start with some pretty sad news. Oh. This is kind of a bummer. Sir Christopher Lee. Are you familiar with him?
I am.
One of the most iconic and revered actors of the 20th century has passed away at the age of 93.
Mm-hmm.
That is a bummer. Lee's career exploded in the 50s when he began getting work in the horror films produced by Hammer, most notably in the role of Dracula. In addition to playing Sherlock Holmes and the villain Scaramanga in the James Bond film The Man with the Golden Gun, Lee found an entirely new audience when he played the role of the wizard Saruman in Peter Jackson's The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit franchises. He also found mainstream success in the role of Count Dooku in the Star Wars films Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So geeks would know him best as Count Dooku and Saruman, obviously, but people who are a bit older might know him from the horror movies and some early James Bond stuff.
Yeah.
But guy was legendary. Mm-hmm. Like, there's rumors about like him being in special forces and stuff. He used to be in a military and he was in special forces and everything. But there are rumors that Ian Fleming based James Bond on Christopher Lee.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he was that kind of guy. There was, I guess, a time too. There's a famous story, and I might be telling it wrong, but there was a story that Christopher Lee was on set, a movie set, and there was something about, I know I'm going to get this wrong. Something about a person being stabbed in the back and the noise that he would make.
Yeah.
And Christopher Lee criticized the person for making like an inappropriate noise. And he's like, why would you know that? He's like, oh, I know. I know that sound. <That's>, and they were just like, oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. but iconic guy.
Right.
Fantastic actor. Sad to see him go.
Mm-hmm.
Happier news. John Bernthal.
Yeah.
Has joined the upcoming season of Marvel's Daredevil, streaming cool. on Netflix in 2016. Bernthal will portray Frank Castle, a.k.a. The Punisher.
That's cool.
One of Marvel's most popular characters. He is a vigilante who aims to clean up New York City's Hell's Kitchen by any means necessary, no matter how lethal the results. Quote, John Bernthal brings an unmatched intensity to every role he takes on, with a potent blend of power, motivation, and vulnerability that will connect with audiences, said Jeff Loeb, Marvel's head of television. Mm-hmm. Castle's appearance will bring dramatic changes to the world of Matt Murdock, and nothing will be the same.
It's going to be a good addition.
Absolutely. Look at
that. The guy played Shane on The Walking Dead, and now he's the Punisher.
Great casting choice.
Yeah.
Totally love that. Recently, it was the rights of the Punisher were owned by Fox.
Yeah.
Just as like Fantastic Four and X-Men and stuff like that. But recently, the rights of the Punisher, Ghost Rider, and Blade have all reverted back to Marvel.
Really?
So that's why they now have the option of using the Punisher and Daredevil. But now they also have the option of the other two characters as well.
Let's see them do Ghost Rider.
Do it right? Yeah.
Well, he looked cool.
He did.
It's just that they casted him as... What were they thinking?
The movies were just bad. Well, Cage is a huge Ghost Rider fan, so he kind of lobbied for it.
You're a huge Batman fan, but they're not hiring you to be Batman.
I'm also not an actor, and my name doesn't sell movies.
And Nicolas Cage does?
Yeah, he's a movie star.
He's an actor?
I guess so.
I liked him in National Treasure movies.
I liked him in Face Off and The Rock, and I liked him in all sorts of stuff. But yeah, lately he hasn't really been up there doing the best stuff. But yeah, this is a great addition to Daredevil. I think it's going to be awesome. Can't wait to see it.
Mm.
Following the success of Universal Pictures' Pitch Perfect 2, the studio has announced that Pitch Perfect 3 has been set for release on July 21st, 2017. Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson are already confirmed to headline the returning cast.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Wonder what they're possibly going to do now. We just did the World Championships. So we're going to do interplanetary acapella. Yeah.
Everything goes in space.
Yep.
I don't know.
Maybe
they're
going to
open up their own school.
Maybe. They were kind of like on the way out
right.
of college, so they have to do some real world stuff now. Maybe with Anna Kendrick working at a recording studio. And then they get brought in as like a performing group, and now they're competing not on the collegiate level or the right. world level, but in the music industry level.
Right. Be interesting.
Logical step. Just as LEGO Dimensions aims to enter the Toys to Life market dominated by Disney Infinity and Skylanders, Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment and TT Games have announced LEGO Worlds, a fully customizable world-building game to directly compete with Minecraft. LEGO Worlds is a galaxy of procedurally generated worlds made entirely of LEGO bricks, which you can freely manipulate and dynamically populate with LEGO models. Explore each world and unlock new discoveries, from cowboys and giraffes to vampires and polar bears to steamrollers, race cars, and colossal digging machines. Use the multi-tool to shape environments and alter any world to your liking. Raise the terrain to create vast mountain ranges, or enter the brick-by-brick editor to build anything you can imagine, then save your creations to build with them again. The game is now available via Steam's Early Access program, with the goal of allowing the gaming community to provide feedback for continual improvements and the integration of additional content over time.
Cool.
I'm a little surprised that it took this long for this game to exist. Like, as soon as the LEGO games started becoming a thing,
yeah,
one would have thought they would be like, well, we need to create a virtual LEGO builder.
Yeah, but maybe they didn't think it would really be that popular.
Maybe.
But then they saw what Minecraft did and went, oh, crap.
Sure.
They beat us to the punch.
LEGO is kind of jumping into areas that already exist right now. Like LEGO Worlds is doing this and jumping into the Minecraft type game. And then recently we had talked about LEGO Dimensions,
yep.
which is kind of jumping in the Toy to Life market where Skylanders and Disney Infinity are.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've read, the E3 reactions of LEGO Dimensions, they're doing it better
yeah.
than the pre-existing properties already. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they're not afraid to mix genres inside mm-hmm. of the gameplay itself. Like, I guess in Disney Infinity, you have your story missions and things, but you can only use the characters appropriate for that world in those missions. And then there's like a toy box mode, and that's the only place where all the characters and things intermingle. But in Lego Dimensions, you really can take any character and any vehicle to any world to do anything. And the worlds all feel very different because they all have different looks. Like the Portal world looks very different than the DC Comics world, looks very different than the Back to the Future world or the Simpsons world or anything like that. Like they're all very visually different. And I guess that's a big plus of that game. But Lego Worlds, very obvious evolution. Seems really cool to be able to take Legos and just build them digitally, make whatever you want and import that into the world. Very cool. And I wonder, too, if this will lead to an evolution where if the game gets popular enough, maybe when you go to the store to buy a Lego set, it gives you like a digital code to have the pieces to build that thing inside of your Lego world.
That would be cool.
So then you have it both in digital and physical. It's like having the comic book with the digital version or the music CD with the digitally ripped songs off that. Like everything is working in the physical and the digital now. So why not do that with Lego too?
I'm sure if it's popular, they'll do it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. That way too, if your physical stuff breaks, you still have your digital copy.
Yeah.
The characters of Bebop and Rocksteady have been confirmed for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Gary Anthony Williams will play Bebop while WWE superstar Sheamus will play Rocksteady.
Yep. Okay. I don't know. I don't like Sheamus. No? He can barely wrestle and barely act in the ring, and he's, you know.
Gotta assume that they're gonna mutate at some point, and then they might not even be playing the mutated versions. I mean, they have been seen on set.
No, but listen, is that what the character is gonna sound like? Have an accent? Sound like Sheamus? Like an Irishman?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That's not what the characters I ever thought would sound like.
True. Yeah, that's interesting. I never really
thought about that. They're already like, we're like, yeah, Bebop and Rocksteady.
And then, and then we were like, Casey Jones. Oh, it's Stephen Amell. Oh, he looks weird. Everything's like, but that's exactly what the first movie was like for me. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, it sucked. Hmm. Like, are you interested at all in the sequel?
Well, I was. I was hoping it would be better. I thought that they would go back and fix it. I just want guys in suits again. That's all I want. Yeah. Rubber suits.
Yeah, it's not happening.
It looked better. You know what? Throw Ninja Turtles 1, 2, and 3. That's right, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Back on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I'll go watch that.
I'll sit through 1 and 2.
All right.
3 is a stretch.
Would you rather watch 3 or the new one?
I'd rather watch 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah. John Noble. People might remember him from Fringe. John Noble has joined the cast of Elementary as Sherlock Holmes' wealthy estranged father. The character has been referenced in past seasons as being instrumental to Sherlock's first stint in rehab 3 years ago and in pairing his son with Joan Watson. I love John Noble, and I love Elementary, so I am very happy to see these things come together. Why is Sherlock? Mm. He's a heroin addict.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Is that, like, always been known, or is this new?
I think it's fairly new because, I mean, the Sherlock we know didn't even exist in modern times.
Right,
heroin wasn't as prominent as it was during that period. So, no, that's a new thing. And I believe it was largely in part to deal with his, like, oversensitivity to the world. Like, it was a way
We need to update this guy. What could we do with him that would make him fit into these? Let's get him on meth. No, too strong. Okay.
Heroin.
A little bit of heroin.
Wait, so you haven't seen Elementary, right?
No.
Okay, so he's not like an active like heroin user the whole time. The way that the series starts off, he's just getting out of rehab.
Yeah.
And Joan Watson is introduced as his sober companion. So she's a live-in aid to make sure that he stays clean and to help him rehab and things like that. And slowly she transitions into being like his protege.
So the moral of the story here, people, is that if you do heroin and then you go to rehab, you'll come out and be smarter than ever.
Well, no, he was smart before, but he just doesn't fit into our world because the way his brain works. So he tried to numb it with.
Rob, you and I don't really fit into this world because of the way our brains work.
This
either.
Is true.
People let us down on a regular basis.
This is true, but we do the exact opposite.
This is true.
We do not abuse substances.
That's true.
Nor even take them to begin with.
True.
Moving on, Paul Feige's upcoming Ghostbusters.
Oh, can we skip this?
Sorry.
The one with the girls in it?
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like shit. Get out of here.
Paul Feige's upcoming Ghostbusters
has
added...
Hopebusters is what it is.
Has added Chris Hemsworth to the cast.
You still haven't revived anything.
I know.
Get out of here.
Feige revealed the news via Twitter, confirming that the Thor star will play the team's receptionist.
You son of a bitch. Wait, I can't do the Arnold voice right now.
You son of a bitch.
It's not a Duma.
Why did that come out?
I don't know.
Oh. Just a sound clip playing in your head.
I wish it was a tumor. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's just like they're putting him in it now just to get girls to
get
go
some
see
man
them.
Candy.
It's bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking assholes.
Well, on the better side, a sequel to The Equalizer has been confirmed, with Denzel Washington expected to reprise his role in the film for a release on September 29th, 2017.
More dudes getting their asses beat.
I love it.
Okay.
Former Heroes star Greg Grunberg is set to reprise the role of telepathic detective Matt Parkman on the upcoming Heroes Reborn. Grunberg will have a guest starring arc on the series, joining other original cast members Jack Coleman as HRG, Jimmy Jean-Louis as the Haitian, and Masi Oka as Hiro Nakamura. So we're getting back. Originally, we thought there were going to be no returning cast members from Heroes. Now there's at least four. That's tremendous.
That's good.
That makes me more excited. And I really like the character of Matt Parkman. So I'm very, very happy that Grunberg's going to be back for that. He was kind of like the glue kind of tying together the first season, at least. And very, very good character. Bob Saget and Lori Loughlin have been confirmed to return as Danny Tanner and Rebecca Donaldson Katsopoulos for Netflix's upcoming series Fuller House.
Good.
Not returning for the series, however, are Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen in the role of Michelle Tanner, as the pair have chosen to continue focusing on their fashion brands and various business endeavors.
Yeah, easy thing.
Can't be surprised by that.
No, but and you know what? You write them off the show real easy by simply saying that they're in college, overseas, abroad.
There you go.
Done.
Makes sense.
Or if they really want to, they can make, screw it. They died. Or she died.
Just kill them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spy Kids and
Smelting Accident.
Smelting. Spy Kids and Sin City director Robert Rodriguez has been set to direct Warner Brothers' live action adaptation of the cartoon series Johnny Quest.
Oh my God.
The original animated series ran from 1964 to 65, lasting a mere 26 episodes. The blonde and brainy Johnny was the 11-year-old son of scientist Dr. Benton Quest. Along for the adventures was Haji Singh, the gifted 11-year-old Calcutta orphan who was adopted by Dr. Quest and Quest's tough and charismatic bodyguard, Race Bannon. Hmm. The series was revived in both the 80s and the 90s for additional episodes, along with comic books and video games based on the series.
Yeah.
I was not a big Johnny Quest fan at any point in time.
No, did not care.
No. I know it's popular, but I don't know. Maybe it was the Hanna-Barbera stuff in the beginning that, like, I don't know if I saw the 60s... version of it, but I definitely saw the Hanna-Barbera version of Johnny Quest, and it was just kind of dull to me. It just didn't do it. It was weird. Disney has announced that a new animated series based on their film Tangled will debut on the Disney Channel in 2017. Most of the major voice and musical talent from the 2010 hit will return, including Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi reprising their roles of Rapunzel and Flynn Rider, as well as fan favorite characters like Rapunzel's chameleon sidekick Pascal, the uppity horse Maximus, the thugs from the Snuggly Duckling pub, and a brand new character, Cassandra, described as a tough-as-nails handmaiden who becomes Rapunzel's confidant.
I didn't see this movie.
Did you? Yeah, I liked Tangled a lot.
Is that the redheaded girl?
Rapunzel is the long blonde hair.
Was the one with the red frizzy hair?
That was Brave. That was a Pixar movie. But this was just Disney. It wasn't Pixar. But Tangled was the first movie that was not necessarily a princess movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was originally it was just supposed to be called Rapunzel.
Yeah.
And after they created the movie, it was when they were starting to get out of the Disney princess thing.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we have Rapunzel already, but let's make the movie about Flynn, about the guy.
Oh.
And do it from his perspective. And that's when they changed the name to Tangled and kind of reworked the whole movie. So yes, Rapunzel is in there, but the movie's about Flynn.
Oh, I see.
And this was a very self-aware movie. There were a lot of things they did in Tangled that actually pokes fun at like the tropes created by the Disney princess movies. And this was the kind of like really separating part, I thought, which led to Frozen and then really breaking away from it. So yeah, this was kind of the first nail in the princess coffin.
Oh, the princesses are dead.
Yeah. And lastly, before we get to our reviews, Jurassic World has broken the all-time opening weekend record after grossing $208.8 million at the North American box office, passing 2012's The Avengers, which grossed $207.4 million. Being a good sport, Marvel Studios head honcho Kevin Feige tweeted a congratulatory message to the makers of the film and Marvel's own Star-Lord, Chris Pratt. And it is, I'll put the image in the show notes. It is just an image of Chris Pratt riding a T-Rex that is holding Mjolnir, Thor's hammer, and the Avengers looking on.
Ah, so that's the one guy, the T-Rex,
yep,
who can lift the hammer.
Apparently so.
He or she, I think it's a she, is worthy.
Apparently so.
And rightfully, congratulations.
Yeah, yeah, congratulations.
I think
I was actually shocked by that. I didn't realize that the demand for another Jurassic movie was that high.
I think people just had hopes again.
I guess. You know what?
Kids, we were more or less kids when we Jurassic Park came out. It was 90
something.
5-3 something.
I don't even remember.
And so, you know, let's say it was 95. I was 10, but I think it was before that. So it's probably like 8 or 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So you were just a little bit older.
Yeah.
Like, of course, kids that age now want to see something like this.
Absolutely.
And then we want to see what else can come because we were like, oh, 2 was like, all right. And 3 was just like, oh, we didn't need that. Yeah.
We were waiting for a worthy successor.
Yes. And we will talk all about it soon in the
spoiler
room.
Very soon. Also, too, they recently released that the follow-up weekend, Jurassic World now has the second biggest follow-up weekend. It didn't beat Avengers' second weekend.
Oh.
So that's interesting. So Avengers like had longevity over the 2 weekends more so, but it was a small, it was like within $1 million or something.
Wow.
Of each other. Yeah.
Give me a recount.
Still very close.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Out of the news and into the reviews. I have something I'm going to do a quick review of first before we jump into the spoiler room.
Yeah.
I've actually been playing this for a while. I've talked about it on the show before. But this is a full review for Dragon Ball Xenoverse. I've been playing it on PlayStation 4. The story of the game here, you're not very familiar with Dragon Ball, right? At all.
Not all.
Okay.
At all.
So in this particular game, there are two villains named Toa and Mira. They've started traveling through time and manipulating history. So unable to handle things on his own, Trunks asks Shenron, who's this magical dragon. So they assemble the Dragon Balls, all 7 Dragon Balls. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you can summon Shenron, who's an all-powerful dragon. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like summoning a genie, except you only get one wish. Then the Dragon Balls shoot into the sky and scatter across the earth
again. So it's kind of like Captain Planet.
Kind of.
When your powers combine.
But he grants a wish. Hmm. And then the Dragon Balls all scatter again. You have to find them, and then you can make another wish.
Okay.
But that's how it works. So unable to handle things on his own, Trunks asks Shenron to send him a hero that can go back to various points in time and restore the timeline by correcting events that Toa and Mira have altered. And this is where you come in, as Shenron summons your custom character to serve as that hero. So one of the biggest changes in this compared to other Dragon Ball fighting games is the fact that there is character creation and customization. This is the first one that's offered that, and I love that because I love using customly created characters in all the wrestling games. That was like one of the biggest draws for me, is that I could make a character to represent me and not just use characters that already exist. Sure, I still love using Goku and Trunks and Vegeta and all the other characters, but I more often than not would use my own because I've become accustomed to them. Yeah. I created their moveset, all the skills they have, all their abilities, and I've kind of made that character, like when I level him up, I've geared his abilities towards the way I play. So it's a character that makes sense for me to use more than the others. I like that they changed the story here a little bit. In past, there's been a lot of Dragon Ball fighting games over the years. This is far from the first one. The problem with a lot of Dragon Ball fighting games is that the series is old. It was in like the 80s. And the story is set. It's been done. And so many of the fighting games go through the entire story. So, yes, there's new stuff added as far as like play mechanics and things from one game to the other. But the story is kind of always the same.
Playing the same story over and over.
Over and over.
Yep.
But this one introduced the idea of the two time travelers going back and screwing things up. And you have to make sure that events unfold the way that they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So you get interjected into these stories in a very cool way, which is a new, fresh take on it.
Definitely.
Which is nice. The fast-paced Dragon Ball fighting style that's always been there is kind of still there. Granted, it is different from the games like the Budokai series and anything. There are just like different button combinations and things. The attack animations that are kind of the heart of a Dragon Ball game are still there and very satisfying. Mm-hmm. Like nothing feels better than like charging up this giant Kamehameha and just blasting your opponent away. It just feels
awesome. This is the game
awesome.
You were playing last time I was over,
it is,
right?
It is, and it's chaotic as hell looking.
It was,
yeah.
And you're right, the animations are pretty cool.
And unlike traditional fighting games, it's not this guy stands here, this guy stands here, and it's like a flat plane.
Yeah.
You're all over the place. Yeah. Like it's an open world, and you're battling within
you're
that open
world.
You're up in
the sky, you're on
the
ground.
You're flying around, you're going underwater. It's all over the place. The character design, the voices, the sounds all bring back the series' feel of nostalgia that you should have from the watching the cartoon itself. There are some issues with the game, though. For one, there's some minor camera issues. Mm. Sometimes, because that game is that three-dimensional, you can move kind of anywhere.
Yep.
Occasionally, a camera will get stuck behind something and kind of obscure your view.
That's the worst.
That is the worst. It happens rarely, but it does happen, so I do have to mention it. There's way too much level grinding needed. So some of the levels are really hard, and the difficulty swings from sometimes pretty easy to like ridiculously difficult the next time, and then goes back to easy, whereas the game should slowly build to just becoming more difficult. But in order to accomplish or to get past some of those really hard missions, you have to spend a lot of time replaying the same stuff over and over just to get experience points and level up.
That's annoying.
That's really annoying. I'm not really a fan of grinding in general. I mean, in an RPG, you're expected to grind a little bit at the beginning because you're learning the game, too.
Right.
But in something like this, it's not really something that should be happening. Walking around the world hub felt like a bit of a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
The world hub is separated into like three different areas, and then there's another fourth area off of that where you go to do your story missions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no reason to separate these three areas. It literally forms a ring on your map.
Oh, really?
It could have just been a continuous, seamless ring.
Yeah.
I don't know why I split that up. So then you're incorporating a loading time moving from one to the next. And it's not a huge loading time.
It's still a loading
time. But it's enough to be annoying. Like, I rarely want to go over to the shops because they're in a different area because I don't want to have to wait through the loading. And we're on current generation console. Come on now.
Yeah.
There's no need for that
stuff. One loading time at the beginning should do.
Exactly. Just load that world seamlessly. It's not even that big of an area. And then lastly, the thing that annoys me the most is that the items you acquire, the unlockables, seem to be more chance than victory. Like you do have to earn them, but let's use this as an example. So you have to unlock the ability to go Super Saiyan. And that's something that's obviously very enticing. So when these characters power up and they transform, and they get like the golden hair glow and everything. They become really powerful. That's referred to as a Super Saiyan.
Okay.
So in order to go Super Saiyan, you have to unlock that ability and you put it in your abilities list.
Mm-hmm.
To get that ability, there's one mission you have to play through. And when you beat it, like any mission you play, it says the stuff that you can unlock afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is you have a random chance of unlocking stuff. Just because you beat something doesn't mean you unlock it. It means you have a chance at unlocking something, which means if you don't, you got to play it again. So not only am I level grinding and replaying things constantly, but I'm replaying constantly to unlock the things
that
I want.
Happened?
It took me like 9 or 10 playthroughs to unlock the Super Saiyan on the same level. And it's taken me longer to get things on some other ones.
That's annoying.
They do, with a few abilities, give you the option to unlock them by buying them, not real money, but in world money that I've earned. And I've done that on occasion, but that shouldn't be the case. If I busted my ass to like finish a really hard mission to get the thing, that just unlock it.
Yeah.
Like, I want the guarantee. Yeah. I earned it. Give it to me.
Well, that's what you're playing through the level four is to unlock this thing. That's
exactly.
The chance to unlock.
Exactly. Like, I played through it once to play it and beat it. But now I have to play it over and over again for the chance to unlock something.
That's
I don't like that at all. Overall, I've not played every single Dragon Ball fighting game that they've made, but this is probably the best one I've played since, I think, Budokai Tenkaichi 3, which was a while back. I think that was PS2.
Wow.
So it's been, it's been a while, but I really enjoyed this one overall. Aside from the grinding, everything else is a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah. So now we get to the part where everybody is waiting for.
Yes, my review.
It is time to hop into the spoiler room.
That's right. We're going in.
We're going in. And we're going to talk about Jurassic World. Just a reminder to everybody, as soon as we step through these gates, anything we say is fair game. If you have not seen Jurassic World, we highly recommend that you go see it first before listening to this part of the show. This is the last thing we'll be doing in this show, so there's nothing you have to fast forward through to get to anything else afterwards. If you don't care and you just want to hear everything, that's fine too. But if you don't want anything spoiled, time to turn this off and come back later. But for those of you that are stepping in with us, let's go.
Access granted. Welcome.
You updated this place.
It's a little dusty, though. It's been a while.
It has been, but...
I've come in and I made some changes, but...
There's some new furniture,
but it is a little bit dusty. I don't think we've been in here since Age of Ultron, and then before that, even much longer. So it's usually the summer movie season that brings us into the spoiler room.
Yeah.
Because there's so many blockbuster movies to talk about.
It's the time of the year.
So we're going to go through the movie and give our thoughts on it. Do you want to give your kind of overall take at the beginning or?
Yeah. Okay. I saw Jurassic Park as a kid, rewatched it. I have them all on Blu-ray. I have them all.
And you're a bigger fan of the franchise than I am, for sure.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess so.
I like them, but.
I'm not like a hardcore Jurassic Park guy, but I like the movies. The first one I thought was so cool to see, and it was just so believable how the dinosaurs were there. And then the second one I enjoyed because it was like, oh, cool, Jurassic Park 2, what are they going to do?
Sure.
And then the third one was just like, all right, I see what you tried to do there, but it didn't work.
Right.
I feel like this movie was so good that it erases 2 and 3 and goes, watch Jurassic Park, watch Jurassic World. Here is the real sequel. Well done.
I honestly think that was the intent. I really do.
Because this movie, just the entire thing is nods to the first one.
Yes.
With the characters in it, with the mentioning Hammond and just even the fact that it's on the same island as the first one. And they're like the restricted area is like the old park.
Right.
And it was just the whole, they just did a really good job. Like they nailed it.
Yeah.
They really did.
I kind of like the part too. Like it was a nod to the first, but even when Oscar Isaac's character, the guy at the controls, had the Jurassic Park t-shirt on.
Yeah.
And she was like, what are you doing that? Isn't that insensitive? Like all those people died and you're wearing that old Jurassic Park shirt. Be like, well, you're not thinking about the fact that you opened up a huge amusement park.
Right.
Like,
right. Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
An accident happened there, but you're just doing the same damn thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. They took their nods to the first one the whole way through. Like as if this was planned, like it was like perfect 20 years later and now there's the sequel.
It is the logical conclusion. Like I was listening to Kevin Smith talk about it a little bit, and he was saying that after you do the park and the park breaks, like the first movie is all about leading up to the park opening. It never opened to the public. It was like a private thing for just this group of people to see, and then that fell apart. Well, then the next logical step is, what does an open park look like? And that's what Jurassic World explores.
Right. And how would that actually open after the first one? There would have to be time.
Absolutely.
People need to forget about it.
Yes.
Because society forgets quickly.
And now this movie's at a place where there are certain people that are seeing dinosaurs is so commonplace that they're just like uninterested by it.
Right. Well, it's treated like a roller coaster.
Right.
The wooden roller coaster was so badass. And then we had to make it bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the steel roller coaster. And it was like, oh my God. And now we had loops and we had corkscrews and spins. And now your feet are dangling. Now you're upside down. Now there's like nothing holding on to you.
Right,
and,
right.
Like it and just keeps going bigger.
And that's what Indominus is.
And
it's
then
that next.
The idea of like, a Brontosaurus was cool. A Stegosaurus was cool. Right. The T-Rex was like the big roller coaster.
But we've seen all that.
And now we need to create something new.
Yes.
And it's a monster.
So kind of going through the movie, we start off at the beginning and we meet the brothers MacGuffin, as I will refer to them.
Yeah.
For those unfamiliar with the term MacGuffin, like their names are not MacGuffin in the movie. A MacGuffin is a plot device in a movie, just is there to help the movie move forward. The brothers were such a small part of the movie as far as
I didn't give a shit.
No, I didn't either. Not really. Like I didn't want them to die, but I didn't ultimately care about them as people or as characters. They tried a couple times to make us care.
They did a better job making you care about the dinosaurs, the raptors, for example, than the people.
Agreed.
Which I like that they did that.
Yeah.
Because in Jurassic Park, it was like, oh my God, the kids are in trouble. Dr. Grant's in trouble.
Yeah.
And this one's like, these dinosaurs are being treated as property, as like objects.
Right.
So let's make the people care about the dinosaurs.
Well, the brothers, too, were put into danger partially on their own idiocy.
Well, yeah, that, too.
So, like, you don't feel as bad for it when they run in trouble. It's like, well, don't be a dick.
Yeah,
like,
you
did this. So, like, I honestly don't even remember their names. That's how little I cared about their characters. So we meet the brothers McGuffin at the beginning. They're going off to visit their Aunt Claire at Jurassic World.
Who's basically, we'll call her the manager of Jurassic World.
Essentially,
the Indian guy is the owner.
Yeah.
Or the investor, whatever.
It was great to hear the classic theme again.
Yep.
I thought, even if some of the parts leading up to that, like, big swell that we were all waiting for were a little strange, like when they're walking through the hotel room and talking and you hear the classic theme playing underneath them, I'm like, that feels odd. But then as soon as he opens up the windows, like, I was expecting the big swell to happen when the doors to Jurassic World opened.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the first movie. But it was fine this way, too.
Yeah.
But it was nice to hear that music again. In the same sense that, like, when Superman Returns came out, they used the theme from the Richard Donner movies.
Right.
It was a carryover nostalgia. And I don't feel like it was a cheat. I feel like it was an homage.
Absolutely.
Like, it was part of the franchise.
Well, that music, when you hear it, no matter where you are, you go, oh, that's Jurassic Park.
Right, right.
It has to be in there. You know, it'd be like taking the out of Jason.
Right,
like, oh, that's the thing. It's the thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
it's nice to hear that again. We meet Claire, who's like your classic workaholic power female type who doesn't have time for anything else.
Nope.
Just got to work, to the point where we see that the older brother she hasn't seen in 7 years and thinks it's like three. She's been that busy.
Well, she's been running Jurassic Park for how many years?
Right. So. Right. Simon Mizrani, the owner of the whole place, seems to genuinely care about the park, even if he's not as hands-on as he should be.
It seems like they never go into what happened with Hammond. Is he alive? Did he die?
Right.
But that his vision fell apart after the first movie. And over the course of time, somebody came in. So it was this character. He's Indian. So an Indian rich guy invested or bought a percent of the company or whatever from him. And seems to be a down-to-earth, like a good guy who wanted to make this vision come true to show people.
A little bit unaware of what's going on.
But
typical.
You know, I could, on my small level, understand. I walk in the gym and somebody would be like, hey, this and this happened between these two. I'm like, how did I not know that?
Right, right.
Well, now you have a giant park with dinosaurs. How do you, you know what I mean? I get it.
Totally. Simon and Claire quickly establish how dangerous the Indominus Rex is because we see that scene and she talks about how it ate its own sibling and everything. So just kind of putting that out right away. Like, this is
not to
be messed with.
This is one angry woman.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
Not to be messed with. Owen, we're introduced to with a very classic hero shot, like the sun behind him, seeing the silhouette as it comes up from below and kind of reaching over to reveal his silhouette to see him. Very classic hero shot. He also doesn't hesitate to show his bravery. So they're establishing that in the character right away. Yep. So when the guy falls in the raptor cage, he rolls in to save him. And at the same time, also establishes how much he cares about the animals.
Right.
Because as soon as everyone's like pulling out the guns, he's like, don't shoot them.
Oh, this would be like the trainer jumping into the lion pit in the zoo. Like, the lion might tear you apart if it's having a bad day.
Right, right.
Or if it just doesn't care anymore.
Right, and they were that close to tearing him apart,
too. They were.
Him rolling back and
he knew they were
cage.
Going to.
Right,
he knew
right.
he didn't have control.
Right, he
but
just...
He knew he didn't have control from day one.
Right.
He's trying.
Right, and it's all... He throughout the whole movie, he never really has control.
No.
He's in constant negotiation with them.
It's trying to actually build a level of respect between him and the animal.
And he makes note of that, saying if anybody shoots them, those volts going through, they'll never trust him again.
Yeah.
Because they took this level of voltage while being addressed by him.
Yeah.
So that breaks that bond right away. Hoskins, we meet. He comes in and he quickly establishes himself as the villain.
Yes.
Because he wants to see the trained raptors used as a weapon.
So this is the second Jurassic Park where the chubby guy is the villain.
Right. And the fact that he's played by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Who's great.
He's amazing. But automatically makes him the villain.
Mm-hmm.
Underutilized in this movie, even. Like, Hoskins was such a one-dimensional character. Not a lot of depth to him. But he's good in everything, so it doesn't matter. We soon learn that Claire and Owen had some past romantic history.
They went on a date.
A date,
And
but there's apparently something still lingering in the air.
Oh, you know.
She had an itinerary.
It's that feeling of unresolved issues.
Right, right. Yeah. And clearly they're, I don't know if they're necessarily bumping into each other a lot, but it doesn't seem like the upper staff, like they seem like part of the senior staff in a way.
Right.
Like right. on but the Enterprise, they would be in the room together.
The size of the island.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an island. It's huge.
Right. Right.
So there are people living and working on that island that you will never see.
True.
Ever. So, you know, it makes sense that they probably don't see each other too often.
Right. But they are still
in contact because he's more or less the head trainer, right. I would assume.
And how often do they leave the island? Like, you're making your life right. on that island.
Yeah.
So those are the people that are around you. So it makes sense that
like we're going to live on an island with dinosaurs. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No problem. What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Right. Well, we explored that before.
You end up as a pile of shit. That's yeah. the
one. the Indominus Rex eventually gets out of its cage.
Yeah.
By tricking everyone into thinking that it's not there.
So it's intelligent.
Right. And we learn. And
it's a mixture of some sort. It's mm-hmm. a T-Rex base.
Right.
And it's a mixture of other things. But right. We don't know what those other things are.
Which we all were like, oh, okay, we find out that these things are going to be rolled into. And I didn't realize it was going to be as much of a combination. I thought it was going to be like a T-Rex and like one other thing.
I thought it was a T-Rex and a raptor from the start.
Yeah, yeah. So we learn that it has the ability to mask its heat signature.
Yes. By accident, based yeah. on just the genes of something that they put in.
It had
it was a frog, I think.
It was mentioned. Yeah, it was a frog. It's smart enough to do that, to trick mm-hmm. them that it wasn't there, and to claw out its own tracker.
Right.
Like, that's a level of intelligence that's pretty damn high. And we find out when the team goes after it that it has the ability to camouflage.
Yes.
From the cuttlefish DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing's crazy.
Right. This is the ultimate predator.
Right. Right. Which obviously they were. Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't necessarily trying to create the ultimate predator. But at the same time, as B.D. Wong's character tells Masrani later on, he's like, well, you're telling me you want all the features, the scary features of a predator, but you don't want it to be one. Like, right. you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
You want it to look like this. You want it to be scary. This is what then it's makes gonna be it scary. Scary. Yeah. yeah. It yeah. has to be a real threat.
Yeah, and they mentioned that they didn't expect it to camouflage or hide its heat
right,
signal. This
right.
was just something that they knew that the genes were there in the other animal.
Right, they were put in for other purposes.
And it just happened that this is what came through.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, like in the first movie, they talked about how they used the genes of a frog
mm-hmm.
that could turn itself from male to female.
Yes, and that's how they started
and
breeding.
It was an accident. They mm-hmm. didn't expect that gene to pop through. But,
right.
You know,
which life, just shows how dumb it is to start the crossbreeding stuff
well,
to begin
with. What
was
the quote from the first movie? Life finds a way.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The older brother MacGuffin takes a break from creepily staring at girls to break the
yeah,
park rules.
Yeah, that was his thing. Like, yeah. For the first half of the movie.
Stare at girls.
First hour, this was, I'm gonna stare at girls.
Yep, creepily.
Yeah.
He takes a break from that to break the park rules and lead his brother into danger.
Yeah.
Great older brother.
Right. Solid.
after the Indominus attack, which they barely escape, they come across the old park.
Yes.
And have the knowledge to fix a Jeep.
Well, that was weird to me that they were able to just fix a Jeep that's yeah. been sitting there for 20 years.
If they had stayed there for like a few minutes longer, too, they would have been rescued right there.
And or eaten, because then the Indominus Rex comes stomping through.
Right, right.
So.
But at that point, Claire and Owen were already there. Hmm. So maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Indominus starts getting closer to the park, breaks into the aviary.
Yeah.
And releases all the winged dinosaurs.
Pterodactyl.
Which was pretty crazy. That also results in Masrani's death as they end up crashing his helicopter.
Yep.
And then was a bummer.
It was, because I didn't.
I liked him.
I liked him. Like, it was a character you liked. You yeah. didn't want to see him yeah. die. And I don't know. His death didn't. I guess his death served the purpose of the villain being able to take control.
Yes. Yeah, it served a plot purpose, but it didn't necessarily.
But yeah, there was no real. They could have done it another way.
Right. He could have just crashed.
Yeah.
And they could have been like, well, he's out of commission, but they blew that helicopter up.
Yeah. So then all the pterodactyls now are heading towards.
Yep. They go out. They go
the resort area where all the people have been hurled. 20,000 people approximately.
And they're just dive bombing them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like they're showing like this wasn't like a couple park workers got killed. Like the visitors.
Right.
Are like, this is like the pirates come into life in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're slashing people in half. Yeah. Like, people are getting killed, dropped in the water, being yep. eaten by things,
yep.
torn apart.
And we see that crazy sequence with Claire's assistant.
Yeah.
Ends up being picked up, dropped into the Mesosaurus tank, And we're all led to believe, like, as soon as she's in there, boom, she's dead. She's going to get eaten by the Mesosaurus.
Right.
But then they come back in the water.
They swoop almost like a pelican into the water.
And they pick her up again.
Pick her up.
And it's like almost like two or three times
so
they do something
that,
like
they're
that.
They're setting that fear of like drowning yep. and like not being able to catch your breath. Like that's like a terrifying
right.
feeling.
It's like in that situation, it was which way do you want to die?
Yeah.
do you want the flying ones to kill you or do you want the swimming one to kill you? There was
right.
no other option.
Right.
So, and then eventually the Mesosaurus does pop up and takes the pterodactyl or whatever flying creature it was right. with her. And
I mean, her character-wise wouldn't even know she was in that tank. You
no.
got picked up. You don't know. You're so disoriented. All you
yeah,
know
yeah.
is you're in water.
Totally.
You don't even know where you are.
Totally. Claire ends up reuniting with the brothers MacGuffin during the flying dino's attack, and then Hoskins takes control of the operation.
Right.
The plan to use the raptors, which was Hoskins' plan all along to hunt Indominus, they
so
put that in
Ingen,
effect.
From the first movie,
yes.
their idea here is that raptors are smart enough and
yep.
can be taught to hunt and be taught to search for something.
Which
they could be used in military purposes.
Right, which I didn't
and
buy
that
at any point.
The Indominus Rex could be shrunken smaller.
Yes,
to
and
be
also used.
It camouflaged. The idea is send them to Afghanistan and get into caves and
right,
take
right.
out terrorists.
Yeah, so they're trialing
weapons.
The program with the raptors, and then they would refine it with the
yes.
miniaturized Indominus.
Yes.
So they put that into effect. Owen's going to lead them as the alpha of the pack because, as Hoskins says, this is happening with or without you. So if you want to protect your raptors. And honestly, it couldn't have happened without Owen. They would have just taken off.
Oh, no. I don't even know if they would have done that. I think the minute they unlocked those cages,
yeah.
they
the
would have just turned
going
in,
after
they
people.
Were going after people.
Totally. So, yeah, he's the alpha of the pack. He's the only one that could have led them. And as much as I saw the footage of him riding with the motorcycle and the raptors running
yeah.
alongside him in the trailers, it was still awesome.
It didn't
know
justice for what they actually
yeah,
did.
Yeah, it didn't. It was still so cool
it
to
was
see
cool
it.
To see because you never got to see the raptors actually take off and run at like
right.
full speed.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That was very cool. When
and
they finally...
the moment where he's on like... the bike
mm-hmm.
and he looks over at one of them and you see like it's looking
they
straight
make eye
ahead
contact.
And its eye just turns to the side and it almost like nods and
yeah.
then keeps running.
There were a lot of those little like nonverbal communications between him.
Well, the
and
raptors
the raptors
are supposed
throughout.
To be like the smartest
yes.
dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
they communicate with one another.
Yeah. They finally come across Indominus. We learn about the last piece of his genetic makeup that he's part raptor.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as Owen says that thing's part raptor in perfect timing, they all turn.
Yeah.
Because now Indominus is the alpha.
Yeah.
And all the raptors are turning. And that just shows how little control
exactly.
Owen really had. So this whole idea of using them for military purposes was pointless.
Right.
Because he was never really in control of them.
Right. But so, he says that from the beginning.
Right.
There's
right,
no control.
Right. It's just, it's the mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about ordering them to do things and them just doing it. It's about the give and take. The raptors then turn on the hunting party, tear most of them apart.
Oh, yeah. Those guys got shredded.
Yep. We learn that B.D. Wong's character and Hoskins, I don't remember B.D. Wong's character's
no,
name, the head doctor at the lab, him and Hoskins were working together to create the weaponized dinos.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just Hoskins looking to take advantage of something that they were doing. It was the kind of seedy underbelly of the amusement park from the beginning was to do this. And make them into weapons.
Right. They needed a new attraction.
Yep.
The military wanted to test out something new.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. So everything
create
just kind of lined
for
up.
Us.
Totally. Hoskins then tries to fend off one of the raptors, only to have his hand bitten and then the
yeah.
rest of him devoured. We see the blood splatter, which was also very reminiscent of the first movie.
Yep. There was a lot of killing and not a lot of it was seen, but
right.
implied.
Right.
Which works.
I think it works so much better.
Because your imagination takes over.
Yes.
I don't need to see him torn open.
Yeah.
I need to just in my head know, oh God, that must have been bad.
It's why I hate gory movies. It's like, whatever we can do is better. And there's something emotionally more powerful about just seeing the blood spatter
yep.
up like that. That's all it needs to be. I thought it was very cool seeing the hologram
yeah.
of the Dilophosaurus.
Yep. The spitter from the first one.
Blatant nod to the first movie, just to distract it for a moment
mm-hmm.
or two. And it worked because...
So the raptor's chasing everybody through the command center. More
right.
Or less than it.
Right.
They're in the lobby area. It's running out of the main building.
Yeah.
And there's a hologram and she whacks the button and it brings the spitter up.
Right, right.
Which is now a hologram in the middle of the room.
Dinosaur doesn't know what a
the
hologram
raptor
is.
Just is like, whoa, I
yeah.
gotta fight this thing.
Yeah.
And like tries to bite it and misses.
And goes through it and then
yeah.
is like, oh, okay, it's not really here. And
yep.
then just continues on. then the face off with the Indominus and the Raptors, the group looking at them. And we see again that nonverbal communication between Blue and Owen. And
so there's what, three? There's three Raptors.
There's three left.
Trying to surround the kids and him and her.
Yep.
And he's able to.
And he's talking to Blue.
And he takes the camera headset off its head.
Yep.
And then the
Indominus.
Here's the one thing that gets me is that this dinosaur is so big and you never hear its steps or its stomps until it's two stomps away from you.
Right.
You heard that thing coming.
Right. Right.
It's like the T-Rex from the first one, the boom.
Boom, boom. Yeah,
like you should, they should
I was actually very surprised they didn't recreate something with that, with like the ripples in the cup or something to that effect.
Yeah.
But I don't know where they would have done it.
That would have been too much.
Yeah.
Like we're trying to be Jurassic
Park.
Right. Instead of being like, hey, thanks for being creative, you know?
Right. We're our own thing.
Yeah.
But it's cool.
And then this is just where this is what it just built to this. Like something's going to happen.
This is where the movie really
takes
off.
And the whole movie, you're just like, there's no T-Rex.
Right.
Like you see it for a second in the beginning of the movie when it eats the goat.
Yep.
Which is a nod to the first one again.
Right.
And now we're building to this, like the Indominus Rex is here. The Raptors, it's killing the Raptors. Yep. One Raptor's dead.
Yep.
Two of them are dead, I think.
At this point, I think it's.
Or it kills all three.
Yeah.
And. It's after
it gets around to killing the other three.
She takes off to Paddock 9 or whatever.
At this point, there's two of them alive still, Blue and one of the others.
And there's one person left. What's his name in the control room? The kid is there with the Jurassic Park shirt.
Oh, yeah. Oscar Isaac's character, whoever he is.
And she's demanding that he open
Paddock 9.
Paddock 9.
Yeah. Which, as soon as she said.
Yeah.
If people didn't know, you don't know anything about movies.
Right. You know that there's something in there and it's probably the T-Rex.
Yeah.
What was cool is that it's then you figure out it's the T-Rex from the first movie.
Yes.
Which makes sense because I don't know what the age of a dinosaur is, a lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
I figure the dinosaur is probably 25 years old.
Yep.
Because it still has the scarred slashes on its neck from when it fought the Raptors in the first movie. So here's this, when they came back to the island, this dinosaur that clearly survived and like just was the king or the queen of the jungle.
Right.
And they've got it. It's the dinosaur from the first park. It's near the main building. It's a main attraction.
Right.
And I love that. Again, I know that the flare is what attracts it.
Right.
But it's just like literally the way she did the flare was exactly the way that Alan Grant, I think, does it in the first movie where
he
opens it and brings it right down by his side.
Yeah.
And like that T-Rex is like, oh, I know this.
Yeah. And I thought it was cool, too. The fact that they used the flare made the reveal of the T-Rex so much better because you saw the glow in the eyes first. And then the rest of it slowly came into the light.
Yeah.
And
it's like she or whatever it is comes out and it's just like, oh, shit's on.
Yeah.
This is it.
And I know we use this as a comparison all the time because it's the form of storytelling that we're familiar with. But it was almost like a wrestler's entrance.
Yeah.
Like it's just coming through the curtain and like, oh, yeah, a new challenger.
And
now it's gladiator battle.
Well,
time.
There's this big fight going on and somebody else's music just got
hit.
And you're
exactly.
just like, oh, cashing in the money in the bank.
That's exactly what happened. That's exactly
what
it was.
That's what she did. She cashed in her money in the bank, and brought in the T-Rex.
So then we see the Indominus start to battle with the T-Rex. And the coolest part, they did a hero shot for Blue.
Yeah. For the Raptor.
So we see. While they're fighting, Blue comes in kind of slow-mo for a sec and then takes off full charge.
Yeah.
And that is a hero shot.
Right.
So they're really not just having the Raptors as like side characters or whatever, but the fact that they spent all this time establishing them to us and us caring about them, especially Blue.
It kind of implies that those Raptors realize that the humans, like those people there, the kids and the girl and Owen were not the threat anymore.
Right.
Because it is like a slow motion move. And then it like takes off. Like they said, it goes full speed when it's going straight after whatever it wants.
Right.
And that thing just like kicked it into
made
high
a beeline,
gear.
And
boom.
And I loved with them fighting, Blue jumping like back and forth on the T-Rex's back to like.
So the T-Rex and Blue, the Raptor, are fighting the Indominus Rex.
Right, and Blue's making some attacks and then jumping back on the T-Rex's back and like using that as
it was exactly like in the Avengers when they're all in the city fighting and the camera's just floating.
Yeah,
was like it was that big epic battle moment.
It was very cool. And that was done really, really well. And then, of course, at the end, after Indominus gets knocked down at a certain point, a gate gets broken. the Mesosaurus comes up and just
so the thing in the water comes up out of the water and just grabs it by the neck. The
big chunk grabs,
drags it under.
Very cool.
And then there's a moment of the T-Rex and the raptor, like, are we going to fight?
Right.
And it's just like, you know what? We're cool for now. Yeah, I'm going this way. You go that way. I'll see you later.
And they do the same thing almost in parallel when Blue goes back over to Owen and Owen gives him a little nod and Blue takes off. It's the same idea. So it's almost like I just saw that as a parallel between. So you get T-Rex and you get Blue doing that. And there's that nonverbal communication
between the dinosaurs.
So that Owen is like accepted as one of the dinosaurs in a way.
Right.
And then
they know that it's just no threat.
Right, right.
You know.
That leads to the movie ending, and then you get the big shot of the T-Rex roaring at the end.
Yep, on top of the main building.
Yeah.
And that's when you can see that it's the one from the first movie.
Right, right.
Which was really cool.
Yeah, it was.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't...
I really liked it.
You know, I had some people be like, oh, it was all right. I thought it was great.
Right.
I thought that was like... That should have been the perfect sequel to the first movie.
Absolutely. I had lower hopes going into it because I really thought that they were just kind of taking advantage of nostalgia by doing this.
My only complaint with the movie is that I just feel like the dinosaurs looked more real in the first movie, which was in the beginning of the 90s, because they were, again, this is just like with Ninja Turtles, where they were there versus being CGI. You know, I felt like the raptors' heads, when there was a shot of them lined up with the muzzles on, more or less, like that felt like those were probably there in animatronic.
Right.
Versus like when you see all the dinosaurs running and stuff, there was just that moment. I'm just like, oh, I know that they're not really there. Yeah.
I actually thought the CG was really well done. Like it wasn't as noticeable as I expected it to be, but yeah, practical effects. But that's such a hard thing to do with practical effects, have a raptor like sprinting around at full speed.
Right. Right.
Like that's tough. There are other things that definitely could have been practical.
Yeah.
But another thing that I found interesting too, that I don't know if it was just kind of a throwaway line or if they were trying to explain something. There have been criticisms since, like we have learned scientifically that raptors are feathered.
Yeah.
Since like the first Jurassic movies came out.
Right.
So if they wanted to be actually scientifically accurate, the raptors would have had to have a totally different appearance in this movie. They would have like the same build, maybe.
Well, I don't think society is ready to accept that dinosaurs had feathers.
And I think they kind of wrote it off with a line though to make it acceptable.
Right.
There was a part where BD Wong's character was saying to, I don't even remember. Maybe it was Mizrani.
Yeah, he's asking him, "Why did you create this dinosaur like this?"
Yeah, well, not even Indominus, because that's what he's talking about at that point, but. There's a line he's like, well, we used filler all the time. And a lot of the time it resulted not even in an appearance that we expected.
Mm-hmm.
He says something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I think kind of alluding to the fact that the raptors that we're seeing that are recreated. Yes, the raptors in real life when they actually existed might have been feathered. But with the fillers that we had to
use frog genes,
the raptor DNA,
they're
not anymore because of that. It's something we didn't expect, but that's what they are now.
Yeah.
So deal with it. I think it's a way to kind of write off that internet criticism that might have come.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I thought that was smart to do. Overall, though, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
Like we said, the two kids are really kind of insignificant. Claire was okay. She was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Pratt's awesome in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was more just caring about the dinosaurs than anything, which, like you said, they did very well.
Yeah. And I'm sure they'll make more, but I'm happy with that. Like, I'm happy with let that be the wrap up. That's
sure,
it.
Sure.
Great movie. You definitely should see it.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
As we get out of here, final thought or something you'd like to plug?
You can follow me on Instagram. Why not? It's Mike at the... what is it? Mike from the gym.
Mike from the gym.
And Mike from the gym. And then there's SBV Supplements and, of course, Westerly Fitness.
To see everything else that we do, head on over to thegeekgeneration.com. If you use iTunes, please rate the show and write a review. We always appreciate those. You can like us at facebook.com/thegeekgeneration and follow at Geek Generation on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Night Angel. Support the show by going to thegeekgeneration.com/support. You can send emails to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can also be found on our site. We'll be back next week with new stuff for you, and we will see you then. Later.
See ya.
Make it so.